is Archbishop William Laurie of Baltimore, and you are listening to Catholic Review Radio. Catholic Review Radio is a weekly radio program and podcast hosted by Catholic Review Media, the news operation of the Archdiocese of Baltimore. We are grateful to our Catholic partners for the opportunity to bring quality Catholic programming to our listeners each week.
Welcome to Catholic Review Radio. I'm George Matisek. When Cardinal Robert Prevost stepped onto the balcony of St. Peter's Basilica last year as Pope Leo XIV, many Catholics were hearing his name for the very first time. Elise Ann Allen was the exception. The veteran Rome correspondent had first encountered Cardinal Prevost years earlier while reporting in Peru on the Church's response to the sexual abuse crisis. That introduction led to deeper access, including a dinner with the future Pope. And when the white smoke rose, Allen was uniquely positioned to become the first journalist to sit down for an in-depth interview with the new pontiff. Allen's new biography of Pope Leo XIV, released in English this April by Penguin Random House, offers an inside look at one of the most unexpected papacy in recent memory. Joining us today to talk about the book is Elise Ann Allen. The author is a Rome-based correspondent for Crux and previously worked for Catholic News Agency. She holds degrees in philosophy and communications from the University of Northern Colorado. So Elise, thanks so much for being here on Catholic Review Radio.
Thank you, George. It is such a pleasure to be with you.
So as we just mentioned, you met the future Pope many years ago in Peru. How would you describe that person then? And is the person on the throne of St. Peter today the same man that you met all those years ago?
This is a great question. And I have to say, you know, I met Robert Prevost the first time in Lima, at the headquarters of the National Bishops Conference in December of 2018. And he is exactly the same person that he is now. I have to say that's one of the things that is most impressive to me about the man, is that he has remained unchanged and remained completely faithful to himself and to who he is, you know, in spite of where he has been or what title or rank he has held. He's somebody that is sort of almost unmoved or unswayed by any of that. He is somebody that is incredibly consistent. He's very genuine, very sincere. He's somebody that if you give him a job, he gets it done. He gets it done well and effectively without making a lot of noise. So he's there to accomplish his tasks, to serve the church, to do it well, to the best of his abilities. And he's not seeking a lot of distractions along the way. So that's why a lot of people never really heard his name. He did come out of this, you know, obscure diocese in Peru, where he had been, you know, Bishop of Chiclayo in the north of Peru, this rural mountainous area, before coming to Rome. So he was somebody that had just 2 years in Rome before, as a cardinal before his election to the papacy. So he seemed like quite a surprise to many people. But I think it is sort of that consistent way of just looking at every task that he's been entrusted with as a pastor, but also an administrator, and trying to do it well without making waves. He's somebody that's, I mean, who do you know today that can get something done in the church as a bishop or a cardinal without making a lot of waves? It's really rare, I think. So he's somebody that was maybe the church's best kept secret.
You spend a lot of time in your book, especially in the early chapters, talking about the future Pope's years as a missionary, an Augustinian missionary in South America. And I think that's really key to understanding who the Pope is, because so much of his priesthood was shaped by that experience. Could you talk about that? Maybe first the context of what he was stepping into, because it was very complicated in Peru, and then how those years shaped his view of the priesthood and the church.
You know, I think this is a really good question, George, because I think it really goes to the heart of who Robert Prevost is, now Pope Leo XIV. If you want to understand him, I think as a man and as a pastor and even as a governor, you have to understand what he stepped into in Peru. You know, he had just finished his canonical studies. He was 30 years old, you know, when he was sent to Peru for his very first pastoral assignment. He was tasked with helping the bishop there in Chulucanas in the north at the time, northern Peru, convert the then prelature into a diocese. He was going through that transformation. And as a young canonist recognized for his abilities, he was already seen, he already was sort of a standout student, you know, in those days. So they wanted him to help do the groundwork there. And he'd always had an interest in being a missionary. So they sent him to help out with that. You're talking about a 30-year-old guy, stepping into Peru in the mid-1980s. He arrived there in 1985. So you have Peru reeling from past dictatorships, trying to get, a hold on democracy. You have mass social crisis, rampant poverty, especially in the area where he was in. A lot of people in those remote mountain areas where he served really didn't have access to a lot of basic necessities, but also education, medical supplies, even pastoral needs. They were sort of far out from the church's main jurisdiction. They were under, the parish jurisdiction there, but it was really hard to go out and reach them. Some of these areas, as you'll have read, could only be reached by horseback, So he's going out on horseback to meet the needs of these local communities, but also you had terrorism there, and they were especially active in these rural areas. And the Augustinian community itself was threatened, and they had to make the decision in his very first year there whether to stay or whether to go. And ultimately, they made the decision to stay and to stay with the people, not to leave them in a time of crisis. So that was his very first year, that he's stepping into all of that. So this is your first pastoral assignment when you are stepping into sort of mass crisis, political, social, economic crisis, where the pastoral needs are incredibly profound. So he's somebody that encountered a people in crisis and learned from day one, how do we meet those needs very practically? But also, how do you engage with political leadership that is struggling to find its identity, struggling to find its way forward after years of dictatorships and trying to carve out its path toward democracy. So it's something that if you don't understand sort of Latin America and its journey with these dictatorships over time, you're not going to understand Robert Prevost and how he navigated that. And even later on in the 1990s, the relationship with Alberto Fujimori, who was very controversial at the time. So there's really one crisis after another, and his job was really, to be there beside the people, being their advocate, speaking out when he needed to, towards the political leaders, but always sort of as an advocate on behalf of the people. And I think that's what we're seeing still today as Pope, as he's stepping onto this really complicated geopolitical scene that we're in.
The Augustinian understanding of being a missionary was also different from previous decades in South America. You write that in the past, the understanding was a missionary was to celebrate the sacraments, to accompany the people in church, like inside the church building. But the Augustinians had a different approach, and they also had a different approach about enculturation, like understanding the culture of the people. Could you talk about that and how that Augustinian mindset shaped the view of the Pope, the future Pope?
Yeah, this is also another really good question because it explains more of his pastoral vision. At the time that Robert Prevost arrived in Peru, the church was also going through a transformation. Peruvian society was in a moment of crisis and transition, but so is the church. It was seeking to implement a lot of reforms after the Second Vatican Council, and Latin America had a very specific take on those reforms, a very specific implementation of it. That's where you really see this poor church for the poor, something language that Pope Francis used a lot that would have also been extremely familiar to Robert Prevost, because that's how the church in Latin America and including, Peru really embodied and tried to put into practice those reforms. And one of the things that changed was sort of the church's outlook on what it means to be a missionary. And so really, instead of going to evangelize, the uneducated, sort of the perspective that they had before, we're going to go to impose our ideas and our culture on to the people that we're evangelizing, because they're the uneducated, they don't know, we're there to inform them. It really changed from let's understand the people that we're going to and try to see the faith through their perspective and through their eyes. And use their local language, their signs, their symbols to help them understand the heart of the Christian message. So it really changed how you communicate the gospel message. And so you have a much stronger embrace, of local traditions and customs. The big processions you see, with the statues, and there's all kinds of local devotions there. The popular piety and devotion is something so strong and so popular. And we see that rooted in Pope Leo. He went out to these shrines, where there's a famous crucifix or a famous statue that the people are very devoted to. And you'd go out and celebrate mass every year at each one of these, and do these mass processions. And we saw him, shortly after his election, go to just outside of Rome, this little town just outside of Rome, Gaetano, where there is a shrine to Our Lady of Good Counsel, which is, of course, the name of his home province of the Augustinians. So really, this whole impetus that the missionaries had, the Augustinians as missionaries were going through this transformation at the time, but also the church more broadly was going through this own journey at the time, really taking a look at the local culture, trying to embrace that, trying to enculturate the faith, and communicate it according to the way the people would understand it, participating also in their local traditions and customs and embracing popular piety and devotion. That's something you see very strongly in him and, as Pope Leo now in his own spirituality. So it really changed, I think, in the sense to which he relates with the people that he meets as a pastor. He really takes things from them as much as he tries to give it. I think you see that when he meets with the crowds, you see him in his audiences, what a close relationship there seems to be and a connection. And so that's something I think because of, again, the journey the church was going through at the time, with this whole reconception of being a missionary. But the Augustinians very concretely were doing that, putting that into practice because there were a lot of missionaries there at the time. And that was certainly the case in Peru.
And you're right that he was enacting synodality long before Pope Francis ever spoke on that subject. What is his vision of synodality as it relates to his experience in South America?
This is a really key question, I think. Everybody I talked to, I went down to Peru and did, interviews for about 2 weeks in all the places that Robert Prevost had served, in Chulucanas and in Chiclayo and Trujillo and Lima. And, the people, particularly in the Augustinian parishes that he ran, because after Chulucanas, he went back to the States for a year and then he came back, in 1988 and was put in charge of the Augustinian Formation House in Trujillo, but also in charge of two parishes. And I spoke to faithful, and parishioners at each of these parishes, and all of them told me synodality. Francis is talking about synodality. We've been doing that for decades. So, what do you mean by synodality, right? I think a lot of people still struggle to understand. It's sort of an abstract concept still, but what it really is, I think, in Francis's mind, and I think what Robert Prevost understands it to be, is really a collaborative effort in building up the church, that it's not just the pastors who do this and the faithful follow. It's that everybody is part of this beautiful community and we build the church up together, each one with their role. The pastors, leading the parish, administering the sacraments, but the Augustinians in Peru particularly had a very specific pastoral model. The territories that their parishes had, the jurisdictions were quite expansive. You have a lot of land, and including some of these really remote mountainous areas, people couldn't get to the parishes all the time for a Sunday mass or something. It was really difficult. So they divided these parishes into different zones, and each zone had its own pastoral team of lay people that was responsible for going out weekly. And they would do catechesis, they do Bible studies, they would lead celebrations. Each zone had a little patron saint or devotion, and they would go out and have little celebrations, on the feast day of that devotion or that their patron saint. And so it was a really a way of making them feel part of a community, even if they couldn't make it, long distances on horseback to mass every Sunday. They would, when the priest could come out, they would come out and they would distribute the sacraments. Otherwise, they would have Eucharistic ministers, and they would go out and distribute communion and lead Bible studies and give reflections on scripture to the people. So what it really is, I think, in Robert Prevost's mind is, I can't, as a pastor, at the Augustinians, there were only, I think, three of them in the community at the time and in Trujillo, and then they had the guys that were in formation with them, the seminarians. And so how can you reach all those people? You're talking thousands of people per parish. And so they really depended on these teams of lay people. So he saw it as this genuine collaboration. He's, I need my parishioners as much as they need me. And we're going to go forward. We're going to try to do things that are good. We're going to try to, not only spread the gospel message, but meet the needs of the people in times of crisis, find out what their needs are and go out and meet them and be present. But we're going to do that together. And it's not, again, this dictatorial, really super hierarchical structure. It's really more of we're on the same page here, we're on the same level, and we're moving forward together. So when he talks about synodality and when he talked about being a synodal church walking together on his first day, from the balcony, the facade of St. Peter's after his election, this is what he had in mind, a church that really walks together and builds up something better together.
Great. Well, our guest today is Elise Ann Allen, and she is the author of a new biography on Pope Leo XIV. We're going to take a little break, and when we come back, we'll continue our conversation. You're listening to Catholic Review Radio. I'm George Matisek. We'll be back in a moment.
With inviting surroundings, complete independence, and an unmatched quality of life, Mercy Ridge is the unparalleled choice for your retirement lifestyle. It's a way of living that promotes an active, healthier life. Located in Timonium, Maryland, Mercy Ridge Continuing Care Retirement Community features a beautifully landscaped 32-acre campus. The grounds, dining, and recreational amenities and residences are designed to provide a gracious lifestyle and a variety of exciting activities. Visit mercyridge.com.
This is Archbishop William Laurie of Baltimore, and you are listening to Catholic Review Radio.
Welcome back to Catholic Review Radio. I'm George Matisek. We're talking today with Elise Ann Allen. She is the author of a new biography on Pope Leo XIV. Elise, as you note in your book, Cardinal Robert Prevost never really expected to become a bishop. He had no sight set beyond the priesthood or the Augustinians. And especially after Pope Francis was elected, there was a bit of tension between the two of those. Could you talk about that and how that ultimately led Francis to have greater respect for Cardinal Prevost?
Yeah, I think, I don't know if I'd describe it as there was a lot of tension between them. They certainly had different viewpoints on, I think, governance, administration, and personnel. You know, I asked, you know, Leo about this in our conversation for the book. You know, why do you think Francis chose you, you know, as a bishop and then, you know, later cardinal? And he said it was really a mystery. He said when Francis is elected, he said, I thought, that's it. I'm never going to be a bishop because as superior general of the Augustinians, he said he didn't give me details, but he did say there were some personnel issues that where they disagreed. And Francis had asked him for certain things, certain personnel decisions or moves. And Prevost went and did the opposite. Very different administrative styles. The two men are very different in terms of their governance style. And so I think Robert Prevost was somebody, again, I said before, very much faithful to himself and faithful to the way he thought things needed to be done. You know, he's a very good read on most situations, you know, and he's a very practical guy and very pragmatic. So, I mean, if you see this is probably the best way to do things, he's probably right, you know. But he said, you know, what he thinks Pope Francis appreciated about him was that it's not that he just dismissed Pope Francis and what he asked, but he said, okay, he did the opposite, but was really willing to sit down and explain it and talk that through. So it's not just like, I'm going to just do the opposite of what you say and there's going to be these tensions bubbling. It's like, no, okay, let me talk through my reasoning and my way of doing this, and let's talk about it and we can come to an understanding. And that's very much Robert Prevost's personality. That's Leo's personality now, you know, and he said that also in the book, that his way of governance is not primarily hierarchical. He likes to do things in discussion, but he's also really open to dialogue. He's really open to talking things through. That's very much his style. It's very much the Augustinian style. Trying to move forward with a sense of consensus. Sometimes that's not always possible. Sometimes you just need to make a decision. I think this area was maybe one of those things where he thought he just needed to make a decision, but he also was willing to talk about it afterwards. And I think obviously Francis, I think, probably appreciated the fact that there was somebody who was really true to themselves, but also was willing to engage and to explain and to come to an understanding and had enough respect for him to sit down and talk to him about it, you know, and that's also a quality that a lot of people don't necessarily know how to do in practice. You know, I think it's something that Francis really valued as a quality about Robert Prevost, but also a quality in leadership, which is ultimately why he made him a bishop. I think Francis came to trust his judgment. You know, I would say obviously he did because he named him bishop and then he came and named him cardinal and then he put him on seven different dicasteries in the Roman Curia, you know, and then he increased his rank, you know. So in the last few months before he passed away, you know, he made him cardinal bishop, you know. It's so clearly there was an appreciation there, and Robert Prevost, through this style, I guess, that he had made an impression.
I think we're seeing a lot of that sense of listening in the first year of the pontificate. It seems like most of what Leo has done has been listening, and there's an openness to different points of view, different sectors of the church. I'm thinking of the supporters of the traditional Latin Mass. He's met with some of those, and he's shown an openness. He's encouraged an openness to help people meet pastoral needs. Do you see him changing anything that Pope Francis did in that area with the Latin Mass, having greater access to the Latin Mass for people who might prefer that mode of worship? Or what are your thoughts there?
Robert Prevost, Leo, is somebody that is fundamentally a man of balance. So whatever he does, he's going to look for a solution that brings balance. You know, I think sort of the debates over the traditional Latin Mass, you know, are not something new. They've been around and percolating in some way or another since the Second Vatican Council, right? And John Paul had his solution to it. Benedict had his solution, which was creating, you know, Summorum Pontificem, creating the ordinary and extraordinary rites. Francis had his own solution, saying, I don't think this really solved division, so let's restrict it. That didn't really solve the problem. And so now Leo has faced with this same debate, and it sort of increased tensions over the liturgy. And I think he finds it very sad that the liturgy has become a source of tension and debate. You know, one of the things that he had talked about, that he mentioned to me was, he mentioned several things. So I asked him about this debate. He said, number one, there are issues when the liturgy has been overtaken by ideology. That's something that's part of this. And there are some people that don't even want to hear what the other side has to say. And that's something that's really unfortunate. You can't have that. And he said that there's also been an abuse of the liturgy, you know, in some ways after the Second Vatican Council. That didn't help either. So you have sort of people that have pulled the liturgy into ideology in one way, and other people who have completely liberalized it to a point of a liturgical abuse almost, where it's no longer reverent or respected. You know, and he said, within that, what's the solution? He said, I need to do this in a synodal way. I need to listen to people. You know, he said, synodality is actually the solution here, where you need to sit down, you need to talk to everybody on all sides, you need to find a way forward. You know, and remember, he had his first consistory of cardinals in January. And one of the topics, he gave four topics that he suggested the cardinals to discuss. One of them was the liturgy. And he let the cardinals choose which they wanted to talk about. And at that point, liturgy was not one of them. Synodality and sort of the church as missionary were the topics they chose to discuss at this time. But he said, that doesn't mean that liturgy is going to be put aside. You know, he said, maybe we're not going to discuss it right now for the next couple of years, but it's there. So it's something that he is going to continue moving forward on, I think, exactly with this approach that you said, listening. He's somebody that listens, and he listens a lot before he makes a decision. So maybe he'll be listening for 5 or 6 years before he makes a decision. You know, we don't know how long it's going to take. But he's not a man in a hurry. He's not in a rush to get things done. He's going to do things well, and he's going to make sure that whatever decision he does make is going to be well-founded, you know, because he's taken the time to do it and do it right, you know, and to listen to everybody involved. So I think what we're going to see from him is some sort of search again to talk to everybody involved and to find a consensus, to bring people, all sides involved, to some sort of consensus about how to solve this issue, but without creating further division. That's what he's looking for here. So whether that means opening it again or, you know, leaving it as is, I mean, I don't know what he's going to do, but whatever it's going to be balanced, because he himself is a man of balance.
As we record this episode, it's coming right on the heels of Holy Week, and the Pope has spoken out very forcefully against the war in Iran, and he's used some very poignant language that almost seems directed at the Catholics in the Trump administration. Could you talk about what he said, and what do you think he's trying to accomplish here? Obviously peace, but specifically about the approach that he's taking on this issue.
No, Leo sees himself very much as a peacemaker, right? And he announces Vigil for Peace, right, on April 11th, you know, to pray for peace in the world. He's somebody that, you know, in Easter, you know, kept it very pastoral. That's his style, but he pulled no punches, right? He was very clear about, you know, condemning those who use faith to justify war, you know, in his Palm Sunday Mass, saying that their hands are covered in blood. Right. And of course, we can all think of remarks by certain members of the Trump administration, Pete Hegseth being one of them, right, who, you know, said this prayer at a, you know, sort of a prayer service, you know, in the Pentagon, saying, you know, asking for violence and vengeance, you know, on those who deserve no mercy, you know. But this is also something, you know, Russia has often justified its war in Ukraine as sort of this holy war against secular Western values. Right. So it comes off, and I think we as Americans want to interpret it through the lens of American politics, but it really has broader implications than that. I think also the Iranians have justified their response on religious grounds. So everybody here is using faith on all sides in every conflict. This is something unique about the world, the wars in the world today. Sort of there's a tendency to use faith as a justification, increasingly so, for politics and policies. And I remember a few years ago, for example, in Italy, one of the politicians, a deputy prime minister, Matteo, sorry, I forget his name. There's a deputy prime minister came under fire for using, Bibles and rosaries during political rallies to defend his anti-migrant stance. So this is something we're seeing more and more, but of course, certainly in the American administration right now with the Catholics who are there. So Leo talking about not using faith to justify war, talking about, those who have the power to wage war or to choose peace, needing to choose peace, praying that they will exercise restraint. These are very clear messages, I think unmistakable right now to many leaders in the world, but certainly to those in the United States who have the power to wage war, as again, we're seeing that in Iran right now. This is ultimately a call to restraint. It's a call to conscience, especially to the Catholics. I think of obviously United States Vice President J.D. Vance and Secretary of State Marco Rubio, who are Catholics. I think he is hoping that his, as a spiritual leader, as their top spiritual leader, right, that his words will not fall unheeded, especially in such strongly spiritual occasion as Easter, right? That message is unmistakable from Pope Leo.
Well, our guest today has been Elise Ann Allen, and she is the author of a new biography of Pope Leo XIV. Elise, thank you so much for being here again. We enjoyed the conversation.
Thank you so much, George. It's a pleasure to be with you.
For Catholic Review Radio, I'm George Matisek. Thanks for listening.
The Catholic Review is the only publication in the Archdiocese of Baltimore that covers the Catholic Church full time. Pick up the monthly magazine at your parish or have it delivered to your home. Subscribe to our e-newsletter for twice weekly updates. Just text CR Media to 84576. Follow the Catholic Review on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube. Read it today in print or online at CatholicReview.org. That's CatholicReview.org.
Thank you for joining us for this edition of Catholic Review Radio. As we prepare for the week ahead, let us do so in prayer together as one community of faith. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. Lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. Let us also ask the blessing and intercession of our Blessed Mother as we pray, Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou among women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Holy Mary, Mother of God, pray for us sinners now and at the hour of our death. Amen. May Almighty God bless us and keep us always in his love.